Welcome to Greek Club at Concordia Seminary. It is the last week of the fall term. We have these odd, what's that little, there's a tinkly noise going on. Oh, that's Dan's watch. We have these remarkably short 10-week terms here, and so this is the last week, so we will not be meeting. I know the creation will groan when I say this, but Greek Club will not be meeting for 2 weeks, but we will. Wasn't asking you to groan. We actually get some stenozoing going on here. So for 2 weeks we won't meet, and then I think the winter term begins like on the 28th of November or something like that. So whatever that Wednesday is, we'll pick up again. And we just got into this interesting and difficult text in 2 Corinthians 5. I was trying to remember. I think we did verse 1, and that was about it. Does that sound right? I don't think we got into verse 2. So let's just do that. Part of the challenge of this text is it's greatly controverted, and there's lots of things written. You know, how does this fit into Paul's anthropology elsewhere, to his eschatology elsewhere? So again, some of the terms are commonly used in Hellenistic Greek philosophical writers and philosophical schools. So it's a greatly debated text, and we won't even come close to even touching the surface of all the controversies and difficulties in it. But I will tell you this, that I do think that there's a defensible case that can be made for the fact that verses 1 through 5 pertain to the resurrection body and the last day, exclusively. But then in verse 6, Paul picks up this interesting language and may actually create it, of being at home in the body and away from the Lord, and away from the body and at home with the Lord. And that part, at least, we have, I think it's traditionally read, and I think rightly so, to talk about what we have called the interim state, or dying and going to heaven. That's kind of the way I understand it theologically, exegetically. So just to get a running start in verse chapter 5, verse 1, just to do it in English again, Paul says, "For we know that if our earthly oikia, house, or yeah, I suppose house, of the tent," one writer suggested that this was epexegetical, which is the tent. That is our current physical body. Kataluthe is destroyed. We have a building from God, or maybe we have from God a building. I don't think the sense has changed very much. Now in apposition, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. Some people say, okay, when you die, you instantly get a heavenly body. That seems a little idiosyncratic to me. I think this house that he's talking about is the resurrection body that's reserved for us. It's heavenly in the sense that it's, you might be able to say that it's already prepared. But we don't receive it until what is mortal is swallowed up by life, as Paul is about to say. So, but again, it's very easy to get bogged down, so we won't do that. We'll just go with verse 2. Kaigar and tuto, stenazimen ta oiketerion hemon ta ex uranu, ep endusasthai epipathuntes, and we'll get 3 too because it finishes the sentence. Agar kai ek en dusamenoi u gimnoi heorethe samatha. That last word is a happy word and it's fun to say. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 syllables. Way to go, Greek, right? For also in this, now what's the antecedent of tuta? Probably building. It could be the idea that Paul has talked about. Is it in this body? The problem with taking it directly with building is that tuto is either masculine or neuter, right? And oikodomain and oikion are feminine. But we'll take it that way. In this we are groaning, stenozomen. And now you have to, in order to make sense of the rest of it, you have to reach all the way to the end of the verse to get the participle. Epipatheo means to desire or long for something. and it's often taken causally, because we long, and what do we long? We long to put on ependousastai. This is ependuo. It doesn't seem to have too much difference in meaning from just enduo, which means to clothe something, and in the middle, it means to clothe yourself, that is to say, to put on, right? Because we long to put on what? Now you get the direct object of the infinitive, ta oiketeria. Now we have a third word for dwelling here, but they seem to be synonymous. Our dwelling, the one which is from heaven. Again, from heaven is its origin, its manufacturing, whatever. And then verse 3, if indeed. Now, there's actually a very important variant reading. Take a look at the bottom of the page in verse 3, that first replacement, or the second replacement marker right before ek du samanoi. So if you look at the bottom, you can see the dagger in Nestle Elan 27. What's the dagger indicate? Anybody remember? Well, actually, I think it's two editions ago. I think there were a number of changes from the 25th to the 26th. The change from 26 to 27 was not in the text itself, I think, but in how the apparatus is organized. So we'll pretend that's right. But you can see that the reading, which used to be read above, is en dousamanoi. Well, that means to put on, and ek dousamanoi means to put off. Or to take off, so it actually is the opposite. And you can see there's lots and lots of support for en dousamanoi, Papyrus 46, the great so-called great uncials, the second hand of D, and if you go down to the Gothic M, that's most manuscripts, Latin, Syriac, Coptic, and Clement. F and G, affectionately known as Chloe's friends, have another verb altogether. But then the text is read. You can see it's only read by the original hand of D. And then also a corrected hand. The Armenian version. Now, I have to say my Armenian is a little rusty. But I did have Armenian neighbors growing up. Their name was Martirosian. So... And then a Latin manuscript, Marcion, Tertullian, and whoever the heck Spec is. Anybody know who Spec is?
Too small.
Okay, yeah.
It says in my Speculum.
Yeah.
Speculum, so I don't know what that is.
It seems like it should be a church father, though.
Yeah, maybe.
Speculatus Magnus or something. I don't know. So. At any rate, I think that... Ek dousamanoi probably was preferred in the 26th edition because it's a harder reading. It actually creates some kind of a tension in the text. So how do you translate it? We groan because we long to put on our heavenly dwelling, if indeed also, woodenly, putting off, we will not be found naked. Well, wait, isn't it the case that you won't be found naked if you put something on? See, so if you read ek dousamanoi, it actually creates a tension in the sentence, which I think is probably why it's been chosen. Now, I think you can resolve the tension, and I don't know if this is right or not, because, again, this is such a complex text, but you could take ek dousamanoi, which is a predicate position participle, as concessive. That is to say, if indeed, even although we put off, and that's what happens when you die, we will not take the future very seriously. We will not be found as naked people at the day of resurrection. See? Because and at this point it's all a little vague, but see, I think Paul is actually going to nail it down when he gets to the purpose clause at the end of verse 4 and verse 5, which I think has some very strong links to his statements about... the spirit and inheritance and the resurrection in other places. But what you've got in a sense is a conditional sentence with the age at the end. You might expect it at the beginning. And an interesting variant reading. There's another one coming up, actually, which we may not get to. So questions about 2 and 3? Anything? All right. We'll just press on then. Verse 4. We've got another gar. And in a sense, Paul repeats himself with some of his vocabulary. Kai gar hoi antes en to skene stenazimen barumenoi. F ho u thelamen ek dusasthai al ep en dusasthai. Hina kata pathe tathne tan hippa tes zoes. For also, or for even, now stenazimen is the verb and it's first person plural, so you got to do hoi antes, that's the participle of ami, you'd have to say we who are, right? It's not third person, it's first person plural. We who are in the tent are groaning, literally, being weighed down. Because we are being weighed down? While we are being weighed down? Something like that. F-ho probably has a causal force here, as it does elsewhere. Because, on the basis of which, because we do not wish to put off, but to put on. What we don't want is to take off and be naked. That's being dead, right? We don't want that, right? We want to put on in order that. Now, katapathē is the subjunctive verb in the henna clause, and it's from katapino, which means to swallow up, like swallow thoroughly, right? In order that the mortal thing might be swallowed up, hippa tes zoes. Here, life is almost personified, right, by life. Now, this is one of the links to explicit resurrection talk. You can see there's a side note. Take a look quickly at 1 Corinthians 15, 53. Yes. And you'll see right away the similarity of the language. Verse 53, and here, of course, he's talking about the final day and the trumpet and so forth. And then at the end of 52, hoi nekroi, the dead will rise imperishable and we will be changed. 53, for it is necessary. What is necessary? This corruptible to enduo in the middle, enduomai, to put on incorruption, and this mortal to put on immortality. And when this corrupt, hasn't happened yet, when this corruptible enduos, enduomais, puts on incorruption, and this mortal enduomais, immortality, then will happen, then the word which is written will happen. Death, kat epathē, there's katapino, was swallowed up into victory, or perhaps swallowed up forever. It's possible that ace nikos there is an idiom that means forever. Back here in 2 Corinthians 5, when you compare it with 1 Corinthians 15, it sort of has to be talking about the resurrection, and I think that's right. And that's why we groan. That's why we do not want to take off, but to put on, in order that the mortal might be swallowed up by life. And see, what this does is it kind of conditions what Paul is about to say, just as Philippians 1, if read in context, is kind of conditioned. Sometimes when we read Philippians 1, we say, well, I'd rather depart and be with Christ, which is far better. What Paul actually says there, you know, I can't decide. He says, you know, if I live on in this body, it's fruitful labor, it's better for you. On the other hand, I'm an apostle, I've been beat up 80,000 times, I'm in jail. So, to be honest, I'd rather depart and be with Christ, which is far better. See, but, you know, I just can't decide. I mean, that's actually how Philippians 1 goes, see. And so what Paul really wants, I think you could argue here in 2 Corinthians, what he really wants is never to have the experience of being naked. That is, without a body. Because he knows and believes that human creatures were meant to have bodies, right? So, and now who is responsible for all of this? See, who has prepared this? Well, I'm glad you asked. That's verse 5. But any questions about verse 4, the grammar especially? I don't know what Paul is saying here. That's not why I'm a Matthew guy. So the Greek of Matthew is a lot easier than the Greek of Paul. So, okay? All good? All right, verse 5. hadekat erga samanas hemas eis autatuta theas hadus hemin ta arabona tu pneumatas. And the one who caught ergazomide, I looked it up in the lexicon because I wasn't quite sure what it meant, and it gave the meaning prepare. The one who prepared us unto auta tuta for this very thing. Auta there should probably be taken as in predicate position, so it intensifies. Not this same thing, but this thing itself. Or this very thing, and then, of course, no verb, just God. Now let's describe God, who didomied, that's the aorist participle, masculine singular nominative of didomi, who gave to us the down payment, which is the Spirit, epexegetical genitive. Three times, let's see, do we have the side references? Three times Paul calls the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, an arabon, which is a financial term. It means earnest money or down payment. And it's the down payment not of, the Holy Spirit is not the down payment of the interim state. He's the down payment of the resurrection. Right. It looks like the first, there's a reference there. You guys know what that exclamation point means in the side note? See that? It's just got 122. 122, because it's got no book of the Bible in front of it, just means this letter. So let's go there. That's right. Go to 122, 2 Corinthians 1:22. And when it's got an exclamation point like that, it means at that location there are other similar parallels. That's what that means. So, and you're supposed to remember that you were originally at 5:5. Right, and so when you see 5:5, and then you see Romans 8:23 and Ephesians 1:14, in the editor's opinion, those are all good parallels. And looky here, in 1:22 we have, and the one who sealed us and gave the arabona, the down payment, the earnest, which is the Spirit in our hearts, which is all presumably modifying God. Yes, in verse 21. Yeah, that's what that little exclamation point means, is that if you go to that place, you'll get more parallels that are listed in the margin. So, you know, I had a whole semester of textual criticism way back in the old days, so before life was complicated. See, we had luxury. We could study any. We didn't have any debt. We had time to read everything we wanted to. It's a sin to lie, isn't it, Kyle? Yeah, okay, good. Okay, I'll stop for the moment. Questions about verse 5?
Can you translate that one more time?
Yes, so the one who prepared us for this very thing is God, who gave to us the down payment, which is the Spirit. Will?
Just for the sake of labeling things.
Amen.
You call that construction all before God, it's modifying God there.
Yeah. Yes. I think a pendant nominative is different. That's where you start one way, but then it never finishes. Hence, the pendant means hanging, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think this is just a nominal clause. I think ha kat erga samanas is probably a substantive,
okay.
Right? So the article doesn't directly govern God. It's the one who worked or prepared us for this very thing is God. Yeah. The other way you could take you could take it, for instance, you could put the linking verb, at least as an English speaker, between God and the next article, and you could say something like, the God who prepared us for this very thing is the one who gave to us the down payment, which is the Spirit. You could do that too, right. So, yeah, but however you do it, you've got subjects and predicate nominatives, right? Yeah, I don't think this would be called a pendant nominative. Although pendant nominative would be a good name for a band. Let's give it up for pendant nominative. The only other guy laughing here is the other, is one, at least one of the old guys. Yeah. That's right. So all the old guys are here. Okay, we're the ones who really care about the Bible as opposed to those other people. More questions on verse 5. Okay, all right. Now it gets interesting. In fact, we don't have a verb. I think you kind of have to take 6, 7, and 8 together. We don't have an independent clause, and it's a little repetitive. So we'll just take, do we have time? We'll just dive in. We'll do 6. It's just participle. Staruntas un pantata kai e dates hati, en de muntes ento somati, ek de mumen apa tu kiriu. Therefore, thareo means to be confident, being confident always, and knowing that being at home, en de meo can be translated to be at home somewhere, right? And not surprisingly, ek de meo means to be away from home, right? Note the pairing. Before we had put on, put off. Here we have be at home, right? We are confident, therefore, being confident always and knowing that being at home in the body, ek de mumen, from ek de meo, we are away from the Lord. Now, the problem is you don't have an independent clause yet, right? This is all just reporting discourse. It's hati, knowing that. We might take that participle. The first two, I think, are often taken causally, waiting patiently for the main verb. And the en de muntes inside the hati clause perhaps is temporal, while we are at home in the body, we are away from the Lord, which is an interesting way of speaking. I mean, I thought God was always with us. Well, he is, but there's some sense in which this present existence can be called what Paul calls it here. He's an apostle. He gets to decide. Right? But you see how we don't have a main clause yet? We just have two participles, one of which has a hati clause attached to it. So, and that was pretty easy, so I'm going to just press on if that seems okay. I wonder if we should put parentheses around verse 7. See? Dia pistos gar peri patumen u dia edus. That is, for we, through faith we are walking and not through sight. Right? Close parentheses. Now we actually get a main verb. Sarumen de kai, two of them in fact. Eo de cumen malan ek de mesai ek tu somatas kai en de mesai prostan kirion. So maybe it's a little interrupted, but we finally do get a main verb. We are confident, and we are confident, and we are intent. We prefer. Eo dekeo, means to be well pleased. The lexicon, I think, suggests prefer here. So we are confident, and we prefer rather. Ek de mesai, aorist infinitive, active, to be away from the body, and en de mesai, to be at home with the Lord. See? Which again sounds very much like Philippians 1, right? I would rather depart and be with Christ, which is far better. Okay, that's fine. There is a sense in which the interim state, we just had All Saints Day observed in many of our parishes last Sunday, and give rest unto your servants, O Lord. I mean, there's a sense in which that's a blessing, right? It's not the final goal, because we all have to stand before the judgment seat of Christ. That's coming up at the end of the paragraph, right? See, and the judgment day has not occurred, because it's the day of Christ, and the world is still broken. Again, you can see the difficulties in interpreting this text are not few. But grammatically, it's not too bad. So maybe I'll do 6 and 7 and 8, and then we'll stop there. Therefore, because we are confident always, and because we know that while we are at home in the body, we are away from the Lord, parentheses, for we walk through faith and not through sight, close parentheses. We are confident, and we prefer, rather, to be away from the body and at home with the Lord. And then Paul will draw a conclusion from that. Therefore, verse 9, and that's where we'll pick up in 1, 2, 3 weeks, right? So, it's what we got right now. This is at home in the body, I think. Yeah. Well, I know it is. It does. It almost feels like he started the sentence one way and then got lost in his parenthesis, and then, yeah, it does seem redundant.
Suppose you take the variant that might give credence to thinking.
Oh, I see. Tharuntes, yeah. That would pick up. Yeah, that would smooth it out, which maybe is why it isn't red. Yeah, well, it's red. Yeah, but that's a good observation, Dennis. So, yeah. So maybe even if it's a little awkward, that's what Paul is trying. He's just resuming that participle with which he started verse 6. Yeah, that's a good observation. I did not look at that variant. So, okay, very good.